charities who have made a huge upset.
Your 2021 Eastern Conference champion.
Attack by Scott! Oh, that is a delicious goal for Tampa Bay.
And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Knowles coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight to cover the Rowdies. This is what I do pretty much every Tuesday, except for next week when we have to go on Monday. So just keep that in mind. We're going to get to why in a little bit. I am with my esteemed co-host, Carlos, who is wearing green and gold. Although I got to say, he is starting to lose his shadowboxing title just because of his lack of shadowboxing at the intro to this video. So, no. Carlos, I guess, what do you have to say for yourself here?
James, I took the week off. I'm coming down from a... one of like the worst like stomach bug flu situation. I'm not quite sure what it was, but I'm still feeling a little poopy. We're on the back end of it, but we're good. We're good. Minor migraine, a little bit of nausea still, but we're hanging in there. Not as nauseous as I was when I saw the second half of this past weekend's game, but we'll get there in just a minute.
What a segue, folks. What a segue.
That's pretty good, right? So forgive me if I don't have as much energy as I've had in the past couple of weeks, but I'm a little slow at the moment. But I'm good. I'm good. Like I said, on the back end of it, some exciting games coming up in the next week and a half or so. Like you said, recording. We're going live next Monday, a little bit earlier for an important reason. But before that, there's a game on Saturday against a good team, a team we've had some great history with, and I'm excited to be there for, because like I said, last week, I'll be down there for this upcoming weekend's game and of course, that Open Cup game on Wednesday as well. So I'm excited. I'm excited personally to be down there again for those games, but more importantly, I'm hanging in there today, and I'm excited to talk about mostly the positives that I want to mention. I guess we have to talk about the negatives too, tale of two halves and whatnot against Miami, sure. But there's positives to take away, and I will try to be mindful of those as we get to them. But James, how are you doing? What's going on in your life?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I just gave blood, so if I have any delay or slow reaction, it is not because of the virus that took Carlos out of shadow boxing commission, but hopefully I will be able to fill in at roughly regular speed tonight. As Carlos said, though, we do have some reviewing to go over, some previewing to go over, and two games to talk about for the week after, but we're not doing those previews yet. We just need to make sure everybody's aware of them because, guys, guess what? We want you to buy some tickets, and it's going to be important that you do. If you're listening, I would be shocked if you weren't one of the people who already has tickets, but let's get you on the list of people who have confirmed tickets, and we'll see you there. So last weekend, the Rowdies lost on penalties to the Miami in a terribly frustrating game for a lot of us. And it was not the way that we expected the game to finish either based on the first half. So let's get into that in a little bit here. Please don't forget our ticket competition. All you have to do is bring a new person to a Rowdies game, shoot a photo with them, selfie would be great, and tag us on one of our social medias. Wherever you use social media, we're probably there too. So if you take a selfie with your new person to a Rowdies game, then you have the chance to win free tickets to the game on August 16th, I believe it is, where we are hosting yet another one of the Rowdies' fun nights, one of the nights that is a promo. And specifically on August 16th, it is the original era night. So keep in mind the original era, obviously 1975 when the club was founded, and they are celebrating with a whole evening dedicated to the occasion. If you would like free tickets to that, enter our ticket contest. It's very easy. Just find someone who's never been to a Rowdies game before and take them to one. Easy Absolutely. To do it. Absolutely. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube, any major podcast platform, and follow us on all your social medias at RBLR Sports, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, and all the other ones that I'm forgetting. Carlos, let's do a quick recap before we talk about the actual game itself and break it down a little bit more.
Let's do it. James, your Tampa Bay Rowdies came out with a starting lineup that wasn't too surprising. The only maybe note is that Bondre started in goal again, but we've also heard that he's kind of like the cup keeper anyway. I thought it might have been treated slightly different since Miami FC is obviously a USL championship opponent, but nonetheless, it's a cup game. And Bondre got the start in goal with Van Kaziel at the right back spot, Castellanos and Lasso as your center backs, and Guillen continuing his run at the left back spot. You had Nyangabire in the midfield in front of them. McPherson, Crisóstomo, and Bassett made up the other three in that unit. And up top, obviously, you had Rubens Pacias and Manu Arteaga. Really, really impressively, if there were any questions about the offensive ability of this team and chance creation, or maybe more importantly, our finishing of chances, those questions were starting to be answered for sure as the Rowdies got out to a really, really quick start with a 3-0 lead in that first half. You would ultimately see this squad tie the game 3-3 officially, and then go on to lose in penalties, like you said. Bill Hamid versus Ethan Bondry is a really interesting penalty matchup, by the way. Just not really one I would have ever thought we'd say. Like,
yeah, in general.
It's just kind of a fun, I don't know, the magic of the Jägermeister Cup, we could say. Really, really strange second half with how things played out. Miami FC scores on a penalty. It was a questionable call. I think it was a good tackle. I'm biased, obviously. I'm wearing the Rowdies jersey. But it looked like a clean tackle. Hard not to call it, though, when he comes in sliding from the back. It's pretty difficult to see that as a clean tackle. But when you see the replay, you have the benefit of VAR, which we don't have. I think that call is different. But nonetheless, it's a penalty. After that, it's a free kick goal. Within what, 4 minutes, it was like 3 or 4 minutes later, Miami FC would obviously go on to tie it up towards the end of the second half. So James, really, really strange second half. Like I said, Miami FC would go on to win, quote unquote, in penalties. To note, if anybody forgot how the Jägermeister Cup works, we get a point for tying. Miami FC gets 2 points for tying and winning the penalty shootout.
Yeah.
The Jägermeister group standings. So take that as you will. I'm not quite sure. I'll also remind everyone that the way you move on to the next round in the Jägermeister Cup is finishing in first place in your group, obviously, or it being in the next two teams that didn't finish in first place but scored the most goals. So 3 goals to start off, I guess, is not terrible if you want to place thing into consideration.
Yeah.
But also, you never really want to blow a 3-0 lead. So we can leave it at that before we start diving into it a bit more. But yeah, some interesting little quirks about the Jägermeister Cup there to keep in mind. Noting, again, that this was a Jägermeister Cup game, not a league game. I think that can get kind of confusing for folks that follow the Rowdies pretty regularly. So I can only imagine it must be even more confusing for folks who follow this club a bit more casually.
Yeah.
That's where we are. Again, the Jägermeister Cup game. This game does not count for points in the USL championship standings, but a game that you still want to win regardless and win the most trophies possible. So 3-3 draw, losing this one in penalties. James, Miami gets out of here with an extra point in the group stage of this new-ish cup. James, the question you want to lead us off with based on the notes I'm looking off on my other screen here, my fancy little work setup that I got set up finally at home. Feel so productive. I got the multi-screen thing going here. How did we manage to lose this one, being up 3-0? Admittedly, I will say, I was telling Eureka this before we started recording, Overlord Eureka recording and doing all the fun stuff in the background. I was at a Nationals baseball game watching this one on my phone. We were up 3-0, and I was like, oh, all right, well, I can take this one easy, turn it off for a little bit. Saw it was 3-2 within a matter of, like I said, 3 or 4 minutes, turned it back on, saw the equalizer, got home, saw us losing penalties. I wasn't really able to process how that all played out because, again, it just happened so quickly in my head. Now looking back, James, I'll ask you first, how did we manage to lose this one? What happened here? What did you see play out?
Yeah, well, there were a lot of things in between the first half and the second half that would have changed the possible trajectory of this game. So I guess we can just start with the first half and how it ultimately played out, that we were up 3-0 before we went in for the break. Yeah, it actually turned out at halftime, I saw that Miami had higher possession stats, and that kind of really tracked after watching the first half. Two players that we had up top, Rubens Paciás and Manuel Arteaga, of course, because they have started every game, they were sitting deeper and allowing Miami's three men at the back to maintain possession, and their wing backs were supposed to get involved in that. They only had one defensive midfielder to start the game, and he was not doing an adequate job when it comes to the defending aspects. Now, that is not down to his lack of effort or anything, but because the two rowdies forwards were sitting back, when we got the ball, it was essentially those two in a box with Cammy McPherson and Danny Crisostomo around this defensive midfielder who was supposed to be in the middle for Miami. And so when we were able to win possession back, then we had this numbers advantage when we were going forward, and they did not have really anything to counteract that. It led to a lot of good positioning for Cammy McPherson, I thought. It led to a lot of good play from Danny Crisostomo. And then if you look out on the wings, Ollie Bassett did a lot of getting up to the left and then cutting back inside, which we expect him to do at this point because of him being, I believe, right foot dominant. It's not always easy to tell with professional players because they're at least adequate with both feet most of the time. And then Pacific Nyangabire also did a good job on the right side. He was a lot more wide than Ollie Bassett was on the left, but we talked about this last week, the way that the two players prefer to play on the wings, and that also tracks with everything else. So with those alignments, we were able to really take advantage when we had the ball. Again, less often than Miami, but if they want to have possession and do nothing with it, I'm sure that most teams are going to be perfectly happy to let them. They changed it up after, I think, we scored our second goal, which would have been around the 30th minute. And they added at least one more central midfielder to help out their poor defensive midfielder. I think number 5, his last name was Mercado, and I believe his first name is Nicholas. I'm not sure offhand, but he was having a tough time for the first 30 or so minutes. So they gave him a little bit of help, and that did even things up. But by then, we already had a pretty good advantage, and we were able to add to it with a third one. In the first half, players who really stood out for me were Cammy McPherson. He got the assist on the second goal, and it was also off of his corner kick that whole play was started. So he was instrumental in that, obviously. And then I would also say that up top, I think Manuel Arteaga and Rubens Paciás both had really good play at different times. Danny Crisostomo was another one. Like I said, that kind of box in the midfield that they were able to create at times looked pretty good. So just makes sense there. Now, going into the second half, we obviously had a little bit of luck with Rubens Paciás' shot. We were up 1-0 then. And that one took a little bit of a deflection. The second goal was, like I said, off of a Cammy McPherson corner that was originally cleared. Then he puts it back in and finds Robert Castellanos. So that's 2-0, 3-0 up before half. Manuel Arteaga, also brilliant goal. I just want to point out, we're going to return to the goal specifically, but third goal for us was fantastic play from front to back. Manuel Arteaga earned that with a lot of hard work over the course of this season without having scored. And you could see how much it meant to finally get one. So congratulations to him. Thoroughly, thoroughly deserved. In at half break, Cammy McPherson was out injured because of a shoulder problem. Manager Steve Coleman said in the post game that this is a shoulder problem he's dealt with in the past. So it might be a recurring issue and something that he felt immediately. You could see him too, that he felt it immediately. He looked to the bench. He was waving his arm, holding his shoulder. So we'll see exactly what that turns into. But Nate Worth comes on to start the second half. And at this point, Miami had changed up their formation. They were able to at least handle the ball going forward a lot more smoothly. They weren't giving it away as cheaply as they were, because I think another big part of the first half was that when Miami did go forward, their possession was really poor. They just did not connect a lot of passes. And obviously, if we have a numbers advantage behind you, then that's not to their advantage. They were able to fix both of those things in the second half. The first goal, I think, I'm just going to say was very lucky on their part. I think that the Rowdies have had a lot of penalties given against them this season, a lot of penalty calls, especially. Those Naples fans wanted two penalties in their game, both of which I thought were dives. I guess I don't agree with everybody in the world on that one, but probably Rowdies fans. So whatever your opinion is, mine at least was that they were dives. This one against Aaron Guillen, I will say, this is a personal note that I put in the notes here for myself to remember once we got to recording. I've given Aaron Guillen a bit of stick this season so far. I think he's been hard done by playing as a left back, because usually at left back, especially if the left winger is someone who likes to cut in, then it's your responsibility to add that width out on the left side. It's harder for Aaron Guillen to do because I believe he's a more defensively minded player. He's not going to be the guy who's trying to break towards the end line and cut a ball back across. That's more of a Blake Bodley type. So while Blake Bodley is out, Aaron Guillen has deputized, and then Joey Skinner was not on the bench either this past weekend, so he couldn't do it at the same time. This being said, Aaron Guillen did not deserve to have a penalty called against him. As someone who grew up as a defender, that is a textbook tackle to try and win the ball. Carlos, I know that you said that there was a caveat with, you know, the angle of the referee, and that's probably something to keep in mind here, but I was incensed at this one. The way that he took the ball while trying to avoid the man for as long as possible, in my opinion, was a fantastic challenge. The only thing that I would say is if you go to ground and you're in the penalty box, you're giving the referee a chance to give a penalty against you. But I was really upset when I went and watched that back, because in all honesty, I couldn't see it from my own position up in the stands when it happened live. I just knew that the referee was pointing to the spot, and there it went. When I went and watched it back, I was none too pleased. And I don't want to use the words that I used when I was watching it on Sunday at 10 a.m. But yeah. That one pissed me off rightly. And so with their penalty, they went up. Ethan Bondre has had a lot of penalties to face this season so far, and unfortunately, he was unable to save that one. So move on a little bit, just like Carlos said. Their second one, they have a free kick.
4 minutes later.
This one was probably less controversial, at least in my mind. That being said, it was well taken, so they're back in 2-0. And at that point, Miami was just piling on the pressure. And Carlos, I think that we were starting to see the signs that it was going to break at any moment. And then ultimately it did. We got to the penalty shootout at least. And it was very unfortunate. Andrew Mustali stepped up for the fifth penalty. He could have put it away, but Bill Hamid is a very good goalkeeper. If you have a penalty saved by Bill Hamid, I really don't think there's any shame in that. He is a former U.S. men's national team goalkeeper. He played in Europe. He played for D.C. United for probably close to a decade. He's a very good goalkeeper. And after that, Nate Worth stepped up to try and keep it even. And Nate Worth was also saved again by Bill Hamid. So, that's the way that it played out. But I guess kudos to Miami for recognizing the problems that they faced in the first half and trying to address those, ultimately being successful and doing what they needed to do. The Rowdies, on the other hand, did not react to Miami's changes enough. And so we were not able to keep them out. And yeah, like Carlos said earlier, a 3-0 lead is something that you should rarely ever see given up. I think that anybody will be able to tell you that. Soccer is a generally low-scoring sport. If you're up 3-0, that should be the game done and dusted. Even if they score one, even if they score two, the other team should not be scoring three goals. So that was my overall takeaway for breaking it down. Carlos, I'm sure I have left some stuff out, or possibly you have some other points to raise, but I will turn it over to you after filling up some good 10 minutes here.
No, you're good. I'm telling you, like, I can only imagine the frustration on the part of, by the way, we forgot to mention the legends that were at this game. Again, this was one of the anniversary nights. Iron Mike Connell, Georgi Hristov, Perry Vanderbeck, just name a few. I'm sure all those guys were rather annoyed with how this game ended. So many were there, by the way. I heard great things. It's one of those games I wish I could be at because there was just so many opportunities to take pictures with some of the guys from the 70s and just mingle and chit chat and kind of see from their perspective what it was like back when the team was really just kicking things off for the first time. Yeah, interesting. It was really cool to see like the content videos of them all there. Crowd of 5,103 people, according to FotMob. Not incredible, but I mean, against Miami FC for a second time already, nothing particularly terrible either. As far as the game itself, I do want to say the Guillen tackle again, like looking back at it, literally no contact on the defender. But again, like I think it probably looked as clear as a penalty could be if you're the referee, just based on where he was standing too. It's so hard to like come in from behind, make a sliding tackle from behind and get away with it. Even like, again, even though it was perfect, I mean, it was perfect. If there was VAR, absolutely not a penalty.
Right.
Because it was as like, it was an incredible, incredible tackle. But again, the ref is over here. Guillen's coming in from behind over here. I don't know if like depth perception really works here. But the angle for the ref just was not there to be able to make a call other than a penalty. Based on what I'm looking at, just looking at the replay of where the ref is standing, which is a totally normal spot. It, from his perspective, it looks like 100% a penalty, but it's just not. So, and I think we've been hard done by these penalty calls early on. And you've made a point that Bondre has had to deal with a lot of penalties just based on the fact that he had 10 rounds of penalties against Naples. What, 5 extra rounds against Miami plus this one in the game itself. Tough run for him. I will say that first half was really, really great. I love that we scored. Like, the positive takeaway is that we scored 3 goals, James. That was awesome. Have we done that this season? Is that our first 3-goal game?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Let me fact check myself. Off the top of my head, I want to say yes, right? Because, yeah, we've scored 2 goals a couple times now. That's our first 3-goal game. That's a positive, I guess. Another positive, Arteaga got on the score sheet. That's great. That was one of the things you and I talked about last week was how are we going to approach this game against Miami lineup-wise? Is this an Andrew Mustali starting game? Does the new academy kid get in off the bench, maybe even start, right? How seriously are we going to take this Jägermeister Cup thing? But they gave Arteaga the start, and he got his first goal. And it's not like it was like a random, you know, fourth division team or anything. This is a USL championship squad that's much better than they were last year. So this is great. I mean, like, I will say that point alone, Arteaga getting on the score sheet, even if we, lost this game like 4-1, I would have been talking about this as a really, really important highlight because he hasn't gotten the score sheet all season yet early on. I know it's still early in the year, but we're still, 8 games in now at this point? That's not like an insignificant number either. So it's really, 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 really important that he got on the score sheet in this game, like you mentioned earlier. I'm hoping it'll open the floodgates for him a bit.
Yeah.
Especially because it seems like the chances are coming for him and for Woobs. Just based on like our early games too. And we talked about the numbers from, you know, Robbie Nielsen's early quick season with the Rowdies this year as well. But our chance creation numbers were high up there. Our XG was high up there. But the finishing really hasn't been there. We're just not scoring a lot of goals. So we know the chances are there. If the finishing is starting to, you know, come into play too for Arteaga, if he's kind of found his rhythm again, if he starts opening the floodgates a bit here and Woobs is still scoring at the rate he's scoring, then I think offensively we are probably starting to be where we want to be. You know, like it seemed like Cameron McPherson, who I hope isn't injured like severely, by the way, because it looks like he's settled in with the squad over the last couple of games as well. I think he's starting to have really, really good games. An incredible, incredible cross to Castellanos, who got on the score sheet in this one. If that's a game he can find for himself and unlock a little bit of, then like that's another great thing. You know what I mean? We haven't really seen him. I don't think he scored for the Rowdies off of like a corner kick or a free kick or anything like that. We know Lasso can do that, and he had a run right before he got injured. If you remember that, he had like 4 goals in like 2 or 3 games before he got injured off of headers and corner kicks and stuff. He was having an awesome run. If we can get some of that from a Castellanos or a Lasso going forward, and like that's great too, obviously. So again, first half, great, great, great stuff. We're on top of the world. The chance creation was there. It could have been easily 4-0, maybe should have been 4-0 with that Ollie Bassett chance right before halftime. That being said, I don't know like how much it mattered to us in the moments if we were already up 3-0. You know, like I'm sure like we kind of discounted that. It's like, oh shoot, well, it's still 3-0. But obviously now it's 3-3 and we lost in penalties. Man, I would have loved that goal. But that being said, Young Gabira had another chance after, you know, end of the first half, going into the second half as well. There was a good look there that we could have finished. Overall takeaways offensively is that we looked pretty damn good against a good team in Miami. I hope that continues. It seems like that was my biggest concern going into this year, James, is how is our like kind of new kind of moving midfield and the wing back kind of weird situation with Bodley and Moon kind of having Moon especially having a bit of an injury history, and obviously now they're both still injured. My concern has been, how are we going to find any sort of dynamic on the wings? Is there going to be really anything going there with Bassett moving out to the wing? Like, I was just a little concerned about how it's all going to play out, and it's worked out rather well. Like, the chance creation has been there, the finishing has not, but maybe we're starting to see that kind of come together in a really healthy, flowing, dynamic offense. So that's great. That's great that we can put up 3 goals in a game and should put up more based on the amount of chances we had. Fought Mob says we had, quote unquote, 5 big chances, quote unquote, which is probably the most we've had all season. Again, I'm not doing much fact checking at the moment, but it feels that way. Just based on that first half. Now, what happened against Louisville last week was what? That we started off pretty well. We played another great first half. In fact, we played last week, I said we played the best half of soccer we played all year in that first half against Louisville, right? We didn't score because the finishing was still kind of coming together and it really wasn't there. And RTR hit that crossbar off of that, you know, one-on-one opportunity. And then we got a goal off weird deflection from Bassett. And then we couldn't really finish the full game. We didn't play the full 90. Obviously, we could say that about this game since we didn't really play the full 90. Like, we didn't play the last 30 in this one. We just kind of shut off. And I'm not sure exactly what we can attribute that to. I mean, I know depth-wise, we've been kind of struggling. Last week, we had the excuse that we played the midweek game in Naples full overtime into the penalty shootout and whatnot. In this game, there's just not really an excuse we can point to. You know what I mean? There was a full week of rest. There was a normal schedule, Saturday and Saturday games. I'm not really sure what we can point to as a like off field or extra, you know, excuse other than what we saw on the field in this one. So that was just a second half that you can't really ever have again. Like, knock that one out. Like, you had a bad second half. Let's not let that happen again.
Right.
Because I think it really was just a matter of like shutting down. Like being up 3-0 and then losing focus. Like, you could probably point to the fact that, you know, you could probably say that the guys got tired too, but I just don't see that as being like as big an excuse as it was last year when we had a midweek game, or not last year, last week when we had the midweek game against Naples into overtime, you know, full extra 30 minutes of game time, whatnot. So that's the big takeaway from this one. I'm reiterating a lot of what you said, I think. But there's a lot of good things too. As much as it feels really lame, like the positive is that what? You still get a point in this random tournament that we're not random tournament. I respect the Jägermeister Cup, please. I do respect the Jägermeister Cup. It's a new tournament that we're kind of just figuring out, and the whole league is kind of figuring out. You can still get to the next round if, you know, you have a few good games. And this isn't affecting the, you know, USL championship table. Okay, That's fine. This weekend, you have a USL championship game. And the following Wednesday, you have a really, really big game, the Open Cup. So the positives are what? You score goals. The negative is that we can't finish the game. So how do we fix that? I don't know. I don't get paid to make that decision. But the point is that there's good things happening. We just have to finish the full game, finish the full 90. Maybe all that is literally getting our injured guys back. So it's just a matter of time and hoping that they get back sooner rather than later. But we don't have any information on timelines. Unless, do we, is there any information that you've heard, James, about Bodley or Moon or Hilton?
Sadly, no.
I think just Bodley and Moon being back would be great. Like, again, we're doing well in terms of offensive creation, but imagine what we could do if, I don't know, just spark some extra energy into the back line when it's like the 60th, 70th minute and we're a little tired. Maybe we're holding on to a lead and Guillen's looking a little tired, or you can throw in Bodley into that left back spot. You know, he's played left back, left wing back, whatever. Like, there's just more options, more people you can kind of replenish and add some energy to the 11 when things are getting a little slower out there. Because, again, we've seen that now in the last two games in a row that we can't finish a full game. So maybe depth is – I'm sure depth is a big part of it, and these injuries are a big part of it. So let's hope that we get these guys back. But other than that, I mean, it just seems like maybe a mentality thing too, right? Like 3-0 lead into giving that up. Like, you just can't do that. You got to stay locked in for a full 90. Not as bad as when we blew a 4-0 lead against Birmingham last year in the Open Cup, if you recall that one. But we don't talk about that game as negatively because we'd go on to win that one.
Exactly.
With a lovely scissor kick from Arteaga, by the way. I think we scored 2 in overtime, if I'm not mistaken, but I forget. Point is, let's not let that happen again, but let's do what we did in the first half a lot more this year. That's the big takeaways. Good stuff happening, but let's not blow leads like that again. Stay locked in the full 90, and let's get our healthy guys back.
Yeah, I really think as much as we can point to individual errors, and we've talked about that tonight. We've talked about that in other games as well. Yeah. Truly, one of the big problems that's impacting the Rowdies is injuries, and the larger problem behind that, I guess, is just that, Carlos, we knew that injuries were going to impact us at some time over the course of the season, and the Rowdies generally have a small-ish roster size. This is another thing that we've talked about. So if you're going to roll with that smaller roster, then you've got to be prepared in some other way. And at the moment, it's just taking a little bit of a toll. So, you know, Steve Coleman said after the game that the injuries do not limit them in any way. As much as I understand where he's coming from, I would respectfully push back and just say that, you know, certain players that are out injured right now would allow us to at least play in different positions, or excuse me, different formations, if that was something that we wanted to do. Yeah. I don't know that it is something we want to do. So maybe that's what Steve Coleman was referring to. But the point here is that even if we just can't fill out our full bench, that is problematic for us in closing out a game at the very least, because we're used to having subs that will come in when other players are tired and they've run themselves ragged for one reason or another. So that is also having an impact here. We knew it would. And I guess we didn't think that it would happen in April, but we are in April, so here we are.
And keep in mind that, you know, the guys we have on our bench, Miami has like, what? Miami had 2 more guys on their bench than we did. 2 of the guys we have on our bench are academy guys. And then 2 more are, what, 18 and 17, respectively, Worth and Mustali. So you're talking about 4 guys on the bench that are 18 years or younger. The other 2 guys are, well, you have Kempisi, and then 2 more, Leo Fernandez. And then I will correct what I said earlier. Lewis Hilton was actually on the bench in this one, which I did not realize. That's good news. That quietly must have happened because he was on the bench, didn't get any playing time. Obviously we wouldn't notice him. But that's a good piece to have in there now, just for some more bench depth, obviously. Obviously, he's been a key piece of this lineup for several years, a starter in most games. But McPherson and Chris Ostomo is working out pretty well in the central midfield. I'm not sure really what you changed there at the moment, but good to have him back. Again, hoping McPherson isn't injured for too long because or severely injured at all. That way we can have him back for Saturday. But yeah, I mean, just having Bodley and Moon back too would help out a lot, obviously. So, but I think that's a fascinating note and not really something we've ever seen before with the Rowdies team, where four of the guys on the bench are 18 years old or younger. In fact, the oldest of those four is 18. The others are 17, 17, and 16, I believe. Sorry, I think Mateus Jesus is 19. I don't have, I'm so lost. My point is academy kids and then young professionals who are still kind of finding their way in professional soccer. So it's really, really interesting to see how that all plays out. I'm not really sure like you can rely on them to play like super big, like important moments. Maybe, I mean, we've seen Lustali convert some incredible penalty against Naples. But I'm curious to see how that plays out going forward, especially if we kind of have this injury problem still, you're going to have to rely on the young kids even more and more.
Yeah.
We saw Nate Worth get a lot of big minutes last year. So that's not really surprising to see him getting minutes like he did in this game. So I don't know. But really, really interesting stuff. Obviously, good to see Lewis Hulton back. So throw that in there. What else happened in this one, James? Am I missing anything important? Did we talk about anything? You mentioned the penalties. I mean, not really much to write home about there.
We know Bill Hamid is a good keeper, and he showed it. in this game.
Yeah. Look, when it comes to penalties, like, experience takes you so far. When you've played as long as Bill Hamid has, like, you're going to make one or two saves, and that's all you need to do to win a shootout. If you make one or two saves, you give your team a chance. We unfortunately did not have those saves, and we missed a couple, and we lost. That's how penalties usually work. So yeah, that'll happen. I was really impressed by how he shot in the Naples game. So I'm hoping we get more of those going forward if we ever end up in penalties again, but it is what it is. Yeah. What more can we say about this one, James? I don't know. You don't blow 3-0 leads again.
I think that's a great takeaway for all that we've said back and forth about this is good, that is bad, blah, blah, blah. The overall takeaway is do not blow a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, but get those 3-0 leads. That's great. Let's do more of that because, again, we haven't scored 3 goals in a game all year. In this game, we scored 3 goals in the first half. We should have scored 4, right? Like, that's a massive improvement from just like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that is trending in an incredibly positive direction. Defensively, got to tighten some things up. But even what 2 of these 3 goals were set pieces, a penalty and a free kick. Maybe you want a little bit more out of Bondre on that second goal, the free kick. But it was a really well taken free kick too. So I don't know. Defensively, like that third goal needed to be a bit tighter. For Miami, like I think it was a little too easy for them. But with Lasso and Castellanos and, you know, Van Kaziel is a very, very reliable right back from what I've seen the last few games. And Guillen is a great defender. Like, I'm not sure if left back is his spot fully. But he's a great defender. Like, I think those things will fix themselves. I think a lot of it is just kind of figuring out how to finish a full 90. And energy depth is a big part of it. So I'm curious to see how this plays out over the next couple of weeks. But despite blowing a 3-0 lead, despite it feeling like the end of the world, there's positives to take away here ahead of a couple of really good games coming up. So an opportunity to really fix things this weekend, James. We'll talk about that game in just a second. I'll give you a quick standings update, by the way, which I skipped over in case anybody's curious about the Jägermeister Cup. In first place right now, South Georgia, Tormenta FC. Naples behind them in second. Miami is ahead of us in third. Rowdies in fourth. Greenville in fifth. And Charleston in last place in sixth place. Notable result here, by the way, is that Naples beat Charleston at home. Take that as you will. We didn't lose to Naples. sorry, Charleston lost to Naples in Naples. Charleston lost to Naples away. And the Rowdies did not lose to Naples away. So, I don't know. We win by transitive property, I guess. But there was actually a very, very notable amount of USL League One teams that beat USL Championship teams. So the gap is not, is evidently not as big as one might think between the second and the third division right now. So, James, keep an eye on the Jägermeister Cup. I mean, it produced some good games this week. I think it will be more and more interesting as we kind of get to more important games later on in the group stage and obviously into the knockout rounds. I think you could see some League One teams really, really giving the championship team problems.
And one of those will be Naples.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously. By the way, we play against Naples in the Jägermeister Cup in Naples July 4th. It's a Friday. Get down there. I've been promoting that game a bit because it's so easy. It's so close. If you want to go to an away game this year, that would be a good one to do so.
And they have good beers.
And James says they have good beers. We've had a couple folks make it down there for that Open Cup game that we won just a couple weeks ago. Let's get down there again in good numbers for that 4th of July game. Okay, James, is it time for your man of the match for this one?
Yes, let's move into that. My man of the match for this one was Cammy McPherson. I think that that's a relatively easy choice. Not only was he only involved for the first half and not the second half, which is a pretty good positive right there, but he was also instrumental in a lot of the good stuff that the Rowdies did, both defensively to counteract Miami's possession, and then offensively, when we won the ball, getting ourselves into good positions. Easy to go with.
Yeah, yeah. He was a man of the match last week, and it came at a good time because the week before, maybe the week before that, I was just kind of curious about, like, there was a lot of, we've been asking a lot of questions to this team, obviously, and I think we still are, especially after blowing a 3-0 lead. But one of my questions was, how is McPherson settling in here? Does he have a solidified role here? Like, are we seeing him produce the fruits that we thought he could? I don't know if I'm phrasing that right. I wasn't really seeing a ton of potential. And then the last few games, I've seen him really start to settle in. You've seen him get involved in a lot of the goal scoring. You've seen him rip shots that were oh so close to getting in from outside the box. There's a lot to his game that I'm really starting to like. So I'm hoping he keeps that up. Good for him. I'm really excited to see what he can do going forward. And again, hoping that shoulder situation is A-okay going forward.
Yeah.
My man of the match is it is Wolves Pacias. It was a lovely, lovely finish. He had another great game, and I just need to recognize him because I don't think I have in the last couple of weeks. And he's still continuing his He's still continuing his run of goal scoring. And in a moment where in this game, obviously we scored 3 goals, but early on this year we have not been scoring a lot. But if we have, it seems like it's mostly been Whoops. He's been putting the team on his back a bit offensively. And I'm really glad to see him doing it still and getting Arteaga involved as well, because I think that means things are going to start looking good. When you have two strikers that are playing and they're getting goals at the same time, that's great. I mean, I remember last year we had Arteaga and Jennings, obviously, and they were both kind of going individual streaky streaks. We'd be okay, but the best moments we had last year were when they were both getting on the score sheet. And if we can kind of get that level of production from our attack now, the midfield starts to connect with the attack a bit more, which we've seen. And we saw a lot in that first half of this past game. Getting younger beer involved on the wing even more. Get Bassett, you know, in a bit more under some shots. Like he's starting to settle in on that left kind of wing spot, left midfield spot. Then we could be good. I mean, it looks like we've switched things up. We're not really running with this 3-back system at the moment. We've kind of did a 4-4-2 situation in the last few games, and it's kind of working. So maybe we keep running with this for a little bit and we'll see what happens. But yeah, for now, Woobs, still my man of the match. Good game from him and a great finish.
There we go. A couple of easy selections, I would say, but that's how the Rowdies have been giving it to us recently. I guess that they are, you know, we can see the good, we can see the bad, and it's not too difficult to pick out in between, I guess. All right, we will move on to our preview. But beforehand, I just want to say liking and subscribing is free. But if you think you might need some new threads this year, you can support our podcast a little bit more by heading over to shop.rblrsports.com, checking out all the designs that we've got going on there. There will be a link in the description, of course. And if you use the promo code COYR, you can get 10% off of your order. This is not part of our ticket scheme where you can get free tickets if you go to a Rowdies game with someone who's never been and take a selfie. This is something separate. If you would like 10% off of your order at our website, you can use COYR and then you will get that. Also, we have a ticket scheme where we have free tickets to the game on August 16th. That is the original Aero Night. Please keep that in mind and bring a friend to a Rowdies game. All right, let's do the Birmingham Legion preview. This Saturday at 7:30, the Rowdies will host Birmingham Legion at Al Lang Stadium. Birmingham have 5 points from 6 games so far, and they are 8th in the East while we sit in 11th. They recently beat El Paso and then Chattanooga in the Open Cup, but otherwise it has been a slow start for the team from Alabama. Normally we would reach out to the podcast that covers them and talk to Kaylor Hodges, but in all honesty, I did not have time to set that up this time. So I apologize for everybody. We don't have the background information that Kaylor usually provides. If you want some more, Kaylor is always on social media and talking a lot about Birmingham. So there is a little bit more there. Their lineup recently has been Matt Van Okkel in net, Stephen Turnbull at right back, Jake Roof and Ramiz Hamuda in the center, and Moses Mensah at left back. I want to take one quick second to highlight Ramiz Hamuda. He is a U.S. youth national team player. He is 16 years old, and he has started most of Birmingham Legion's games this season. What were you doing at 16? I can tell you I was not starting for a professional soccer team. I was barely starting ever for my high school team.
I was pretty good at FIFA. I was getting pretty good at FIFA at 16.
So. Ramiz Hamuda might be on FIFA, actually. So depending on what availability they have for USL teams, I'm not entirely sure. But just keep that in mind, everybody who's out there. Enzo Martinez is the defensive midfielder recently. Keep that in mind. We hate him. Up in midfield, in front of him, Dawson McCartney, Kobe Hernandez-Foster, Tyler Pasher, and Danny Trejo are likely to start, although there have been switches here and there. Roman Torres is another player that has started, and I think his name is Sebastian McIlhattan. Not Manhattan, McIlhattan are players that have also been in the midfield. Up top, we are most likely to see Ronaldo Damas. If you don't know that name, it is a very important name in Rowdy's history, and especially across the USL. He is a big-time goal scorer and a big get for Birmingham this past offseason. Ronaldo Damas has 5 goals across 2025, 4 of those in USL, only 1 in cup action. We have improved recently, as Carlos and I were just talking about, but right now it should also be pointed out that Birmingham lead in the overall series between our two clubs. I don't like that personally. I would like us to win this game. I would like us to win this game in 90 minutes because we're not going to have extra time or even penalties like we did this past weekend. Let's just get this game done in 90 minutes. Carlos, do you have anything to add before we do our predictions?
Not much. I will say I was looking at the Birmingham lineup from last week against Chattanooga Red Wolves. They played them in the Yearmaster Cup. A pretty good Red Wolves side, by the way. I take that back. They're like in 9th place. I've just seen them a few games on. They play pretty decent soccer, but nothing in particular from Birmingham to write home about in this one. They went up 1-0, and then Chattanooga got a red card. From there, it just kind of spiraled, and Chattanooga was on to lose 3-1 to a pretty decent Birmingham performance. I noticed because I felt familiar. The goalkeeper for that Birmingham team, starting goalkeeper, was Fernando Delgado, who is only 18. So I would assume this time last year he was 17, which would make sense, James. This was the poor, he was a poor kid at the time that we scored 6 goals on between 90 minutes and overtime in the Open Cup game between the Moon and Arteaga goals. The Moon and Arteaga goals last year in overtime and that crazy, crazy game. To this day, I'm not sure why Birmingham threw a 17-year-old keeper into a starting role against the Rowdies in the Open Cup game, but they did last year. We probably won't see him again. We're probably going to get Matt Van Okkel, but hopefully he can put up 6 goals against them again, even if it is against Van Okkel, who we've had quite a history with at this point. Birmingham is an annoying team, James. I feel like that's a great word for them.
Yes.
They're always like pretty good, and we're always better than them, and we find ways to lose to them regularly. That being said, they're not good this year, but if you look at the numbers, neither are we. I think they have the potential to be great-ish in the league. I think they'll certainly be a playoff team once they kind of find their rhythm. But I think in a lot of ways, they're kind of in the same position as we are. Again, 11th / 12th place based on the tiebreaker, which is where we are right now, versus what, they're in 8th place. Sounds like a pretty stark difference, but again, with it being only how many games is the regular season? I'm looking at the Jägermeister Cup table. FODMOB gets so confused with the – we're only like 5, 6, or 7 games, depending on who you are, into the regular season. One win against this Birmingham squad, and we can get shot up as high as 8th place. We can swap spots with them. That would be nice. So maybe it's hard to catch up to a first-place squad at this point with a really, really struggling start. But there's a lot of room to really make up ground, certainly make the playoffs. I still think you have to make the playoffs this year, like with what, 8 teams getting in. Like, it's a total failure of a season if you don't even make the playoffs. So I think we have a lot of room this season to still make up a lot of ground on the table. Birmingham is a team that I think we can do it against this weekend. I predict a lot of wins just by nature of kind of who I am. And I think I'm going to do that again this weekend, James. Like I said, I think Birmingham was kind of in the same position as us. They've gotten a couple more ties, which is the difference in the standings. So nothing like incredibly impressive or anything. I think we win this one. I'm going to say 3-1. Yeah. I'm going to say 3-1. Based off of the fact that we're scoring a lot of goals over the last couple of games. I hope we can keep that up. I hope we can play most of a full 90 and give up like a silly goal in like the 70th minute, hang on, score a garbage time goal and win 3-1. That's what I would like to see. I mean, I would like to see like a 5-0 win, but
right.
I think this is still an optimistic but realistic possibility. We just need one really, really good game to kind of get things going. And it, unfortunately, it just hasn't happened yet. We haven't had one like really, really good game. We've had very good moments for the last couple of weeks. Like, we've played two of the best halves of soccer we've played all year between that first half of Louisville, particularly this last weekend's first half against Miami. Incredible stuff. If you can like combine those two together, you would have a full 90 and one of the best games we'll probably play all season. So let's do that against Birmingham. Let's play a full 90. I think we're on the way there. And I think we can get a win this week. Maybe this will continue to set me back in the prediction standings, but I'm okay with that as long as I, you know, keep the optimism and hopefully get that win.
And on the other side of things, Eureka and I have gone with draws for this one. A 2-2 draw for me, a 1-1 draw for Eureka. I am going with that specifically. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but we have to keep in mind that the game after on Wednesday is probably going to be an even bigger focus for the team. I know that the league is important and every point is important because we've already dropped quite a few. But yes, I still think that the focus for the next couple of days is going to be next Wednesday, not tomorrow, April 30th, when this comes out on all the podcast platforms, but the one afterwards. So with that out of the way, let's actually turn over to that game, Carlos. Next week, this is, again, next week, Wednesday, May 7th. Just want to make sure everybody listening has the exact date. May 7th, we play in the Open Cup. Who do we play in the Open Cup? Orlando City. Where do we play them? At Al Lang Stadium in St. Petersburg. If you do not have tickets, you need to get them. If you do not have plans, you have plans now. You are going to this game, you are going to cheer against Orlando City, and you are going to give it your all so that the players on the field can give it their all to beat this team. Carlos has pointed out just what he would give to see us win this game. He is also going to join us from his place in DC. He's coming down to see us hopefully beat Orlando City, this team that nobody likes because of their lurid history as actual vagrants who are destroying our stadium and keying people's cars in the parking lot and all the other stuff that you've heard about or haven't heard about. But this is the game. This is the big game. This is why I think that they're going to focus a little bit, tiny bit less on Saturday and focus more on Wednesday. Because if we can beat Orlando City at Al Lang Stadium, I don't give a that about any of the games before this one. I won't care about any of the games through March or April and possibly some of May. This one is when our season, if we can win this one, not otherwise, but if we can win this one, that's when our season starts.
Yeah. Can you imagine like the turnaround that this would spark, by the way, if you can pull that off? Like,
exactly.
I know I hear what you're saying about the maybe slightly less focus and very, very, very slightly, because I think as a professional, these guys are kind of trained to take every game kind of the same level. And the reality is that most of the players who are on the squad have never played against an Orlando side, whether it's Orlando City or Orlando City B. Leo Fernandez is the only player on the squad who played against Orlando City B in that first USL season. What was it, three times? That was the season opener was against Orlando City B at home, packed house, incredible crowd. Several incidents with some hooligans from the Orlando side. But a great, great game that Leo Fernandez was able to draw the penalty for that Georgi Hristov goal that would let us win 1-0. And that was the last time, it was the last time we hosted Orlando City-ish at home. It was that 2017 game. Before that, the last time we hosted not Orlando City B was 2014. So kind of 11 years in the making at this point, James. If you want to include that OCB game, 8 years in the making.
Either way, a lot in both games, it has been a long time.
Yeah, in terms of hosting this one, we went down there or over there in 2022 for the Open Cup, lost that one.
You can say down there, you can say down to hell.
Yeah, and then the one where that infamous Neil Collins expulsion that I'll always remember and have a soft spot in my heart for him. That was a really special game, even though we lost. Just the Neil Collins moment was so fun to watch from the stands. So there's this game's so fascinating for so many reasons, and I think anyone outside of the Rowdies or Orlando City kind of inner circles might not really understand why it means so much to so many people in those circles. Because it's kind of weird. Like regionally, it makes sense, but these teams have only ever played a handful of times competitively. I mean, they had those like friendly organized I-4. What they call it, like the I-4 Cup. They called it something. That wasn't like the I-4 Derby, but they had like a cup that they played a couple times, like 2013, 2014, maybe 2012, like early on. Played an Open Cup like three times, and they've never been in the same league. So it's just a really, really strange history that a lot of people might not really understand, but regionally it would make sense. It's such a unique matchup. And like you said, I would give up a lot of wins this year for this one win. I mean, just the opportunity to kind of turn the season around with something like this is incredible. I really can't imagine a better way to kind of spark things for the rest of the year. Even if you do get this win against Birmingham this weekend, which fingers crossed, we hope we can. I think we will. That would be kind of the definition of turning a season around, is a win against Orlando City next weekend. So next week, Wednesday, May 7th. Yeah, so it'll be a good one. Buy your tickets. If we lose on the field, I don't want to lose in the stands. You know what I mean? Get your tickets. Be loud. Don't get your scarves or flags or banners stolen, hold on to them tight. And let's go win an important game, man. We'll dive into this one a bit more next week on Monday. Like you said, we'll go live next Monday to record slash go live. Noting that that game is on Wednesday. So we'll dive into this one a bit more, the numbers, actual preview of it a bit more next week. And we'll obviously review the Birmingham game as well. But for now, I'll remind you to buy your tickets. If there's a game you want to bring a friend to, maybe create a new Rowdies diehard, this is one where you might have that opportunity. Truly will be a unique environment. So bring people, make it loud. It's hard to pack out a stadium on a Wednesday, but I believe in us. So yeah. Get on Ticketmaster, run up those tickets. It's not on Ticketmaster, sorry. It's whatever platform they use. And run up those ticket sales and let's make it happen, James.
There we go. You have your marching orders from Carlos. The next thing that we need to talk about is an unfortunate one, but it took up a lot of space online, especially. Oh, yeah. So we do need to talk about it. There was a report in, I believe, the Tampa Bay Business Journal, something like that. I forget exactly, so I apologize. I didn't have that specifically in front of me. Regardless, there are rumors that the mayor of St. Pete is looking to find a way after the Rowdies lease at Al Lang is over to ultimately demolish that and probably rebuild something in its place, something that would be, I don't know, provide what they think is going to be
outdoor amphitheater.
I'm sure there are lots of options. Right now, though, it should be noted that these are just rumors, although at the same time, I think I'll talk about, you know, the way that I think of Al Lang, but we should all be aware that this was probably in the offing at some point anyway. The Rowdies are there on a lease because I think that taking that land and owning it is going to be a very difficult proposition. It was always probably meant to be a temporary thing, and a more permanent home was something that will need to be constructed. We're not at that place yet, so that is something that was reported on recently. We don't have any confirmation. Again, I do want to point that out, but it is something that is out there, possibly with the mayor working on it at the moment.
Yeah, this was, I saw this on Spectrum and all, like it was not like officially a proposal, but it was a concept that the St. Pete mayor, Ken Welch, showed the city council members, I believe last Thursday. Showing renderings of the concept. I'm just quoting from the Spectrum News article now. Plans would include the amphitheater, a new building for the Florida Orchestra, and a 400-car parking garage. So, yeah, make of that what you will. It's rather silly, I think. I'm not quite sure, like, where that's coming from. But like you said, it is a good point to note that Al Lang is probably not the long-term solution for the Rowdies' stadium question. There will be some sort of change. And I saw a message, and this was on the Ralph's Mob Discord. I think Steven put it in there, which I thought was an interesting point, that Rowdies fans are in a really interesting spot that we don't really know what we should be advocating for at the moment, because we don't, like, there's not really a set of options for, there's so many different possibilities. The Rays owning the Rowdies are a factor, and the Rays have talked about moving. We had that moment where the Rays were going to play half the season in Montreal and half the season down here. And Orlando is putting together $1 billion to try and get the Rays to go over there. And other cities want the Rays to go wherever they are, like Nashville. And what does that mean? I don't think that means Rowdies relocation. I think that more likely means Rowdies get sold to a more local owner. But that also comes with stadium discussions and what another owner wants to do with a stadium. Or if the Rays stick around, what do the Rays want to do with Al Lang Stadium? There's a lot of questions and not a lot of definitive possibilities. But for the moment, I do think tearing down Al Lang would be rather stupid and wasteful, especially when they put in a few million to just recently touch it up and renovate it because of the hurricane. I'm also quite sure, and I've never been a St. Pete resident, but my understanding of St. Pete local politics is that any like infrastructure redevelopment or development on the water over there has to be approved by a public referendum. And it asked, and it seemed like the city council members themselves were rather opposed to it based on the articles. So I'm not even sure it gets to that point, but if it does get to a public referendum, it seems like there was a lot of public pushback based on social media from folks that aren't even like big Rowdies fans or anything. So I'd be surprised. It seems like there's multiple levels that need to get overcome for something like that to happen, for the mayor's plan to actually take place. So I'd be surprised if that whole proposal actually goes through, James, and becomes something concrete. But if it does, that would suck because I think Outlang is a really unique place. But like you said, probably not the long-term home of the Rowdies at this point, even though it has a special place and I love it to death. But again, I don't think this mayor's proposal really gets through anyway. So not necessarily a rumor. It seems like a real possibility, but not one that I think will actually happen. So I think that can calm some folks' nerves for at least the next few seasons. But either way,
yeah,
we have to figure things out at some point about a stadium or put some serious money into Outlang. Either way, something's going to happen. So
that's the other way to look at it, is if we're going to stay at Outlang or make it a more permanent location, then yes, it will require a lot more money. And I know that they have probably put a lot more money, maybe a lot more money than they expected to put in. I can't say, but that is what it will take. So I am also a big fan of Outlang, even though I was previously living in Tampa, now live in Bradenton. I guess in that sense, it is somewhat convenient, but I wasn't planning on that when I was living in Tampa before, and I was still a very big fan of the location. My big focus is, if you have a soccer stadium specifically, it needs to be downtown. If you can, if it's for NFL, you can put it out in wherever the hell the New England Patriots have their stadium, which is not in Boston. Yeah, exactly. But if you are building a stadium for a soccer team and they are going to play in Boston, it should be as close to downtown Boston as possible. So I always loved the location of Outlang Stadium, and it is unfortunate, but this was something that was always coming if they did not purchase it outright. And I don't know how much that would cost. Probably a shit ton of money.
Based on the history of the Rays when it comes to spending like Rays money on things, I wouldn't put my life savings on the Rays investing a ton of money into Outlang or anything like that in the future. So lots of questions, not a ton of answers, but again, I don't think this is something to be like concerned about necessarily, like where the Rowdies going to play next year. Like, even if it does go through, it's going to take several years, but I don't think it will go through. Like, I think there's probably conversations about where the Rowdies are going to be long-term happening already. Who knows if it's Outlang, but this is something that's probably been discussed for a while now. So
yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Exactly. All right. And Carlos, you have one last point here. I will leave it to you to get us going.
Yeah. I just want to throw this out to you, James, before we wrap up here. This is an important conversation I've seen on Twitter. Do you think 100 people could beat one gorilla in a fight to the death?
I think that, and I read somebody who was at least self-styled an expert. I'm assuming that means that he is a biologist who has studied these animals. But I will say I think literally 100 people could beat a gorilla. I will throw that out there.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen a lot of people say no, and mostly because of the fact that like people are going to start running away once the first person gets torn limb from limb. But if you can't run away, like you just have to dog it out. Like, I don't know, someone's going to shoot you if you start running away. Like, I feel like we can thug out a gorilla, but I'm not going to lie. Like, it'll be tough. And I don't want to be the first one going against the gorilla.
So. I don't want to be the first one. Yeah. But, eventually enough people can overpower. If it takes five people per arm and five people per leg, which it might, then you still have, you know, close to, depending on how many have passed away by this point, you probably have 70-60 people left over. So
All right, thanks for that input, James. It's a really important question. We just needed to throw out on the podcast today. thank you all for listening and indulging us in that important Rowdies related question at the end. Be sure to follow at RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, anywhere and everywhere, wherever you are, we are there too. Follow James and I. I'm at CarlosTPA10 on Twitter. James, where can folks find you?
At RBLR James K.
There you go. Follow us for Rowdies related content and see me occasionally get into it with Orlando City Bots over the next few days. I'm sure it'll kind of ramp up as we get closer to that one. Like, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify Podcasts, on YouTube. You can get us in HD on YouTube, on your screen. You can put us on your iPhone. You can AirPlay us on your TV if you want to. We're there. We're on Spotify, everywhere, 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 everywhere. James, for another week of Tampa Bay Rowdies content and a couple big games coming up, come on, you Rowdies.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.